The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Hello and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Club football is back. Craig Burley, Stevie Nicol here to talk about it alongside myself, Kay Murray. We'll be hearing from more throughout the day. And there is a big game coming in Germany this weekend. It's Bayern Munich taking on Borussia Dortmund in Der Klassiker. Just a point separating the two at the top of the table. And it is Borussia Dortmund on top right now. Massive game, made even bigger by the fact that Bayern have a new coach in the form of Thomas Tuchel. He talks about the match in his pre-game presser, but also how he was fired at Chelsea.
I felt it, strangely enough. I felt it in the morning when I drove to the training center, that the meeting we will have will be a bit of an unusual meeting. And it was a very short meeting in the morning after the Champions League match, like at 8 o'clock or something. So it was a 3 to 5 minutes meeting. I was also not in the mood to talk longer to the decision makers, I have to say honestly. It was a shock for all of us. We had the feeling that we are in the right spot, the right time.
What is the challenge that your first match could be the biggest match, at least for the Bundesliga season?
It's a big match. It's a very big match in the German Bundesliga, of course, but it brings out the very best in us. I'm very confident. The players are used to these situations, to perform under these kind of circumstances. I am not afraid of the circumstances, so the club is used to it, and everyone is very excited and everyone is happy. It's a big match, no doubt about it, and we will hopefully be absolutely ready to face the challenge.
Mm-hmm. Now, a look at previous meetings between the two sides is not good reading for Borussia Dortmund. The reverse fixture saw Dortmund come back from 2-2 to draw 2-2. But before that, 8 straight wins for Bayern Munich. In fact, Dortmund's last win over their rival was all the way back in August of 2019. But let's get word from our team in Munich right now. Archie Rintut, Derek Ray and Arne Friedrich ahead of the latest clash.
Welcome to Munich on the eve of the big one. Bayern Munich against Borussia Dortmund. And for an appropriately sized game, I have appropriately sized guests in Derek Ray and Arne Friedrich. Arne, I'll start with you. No one saw Thomas Tuchel being in charge of this game for Bayern Munich 2 weeks ago. So what impact is he going to make as Bayern coach, do you think?
Obviously, he didn't really have too much time to prepare the team. First of all, many players were on the road playing for their countries. But I expect a huge impact, to be honest, because every player has to show up now and everybody wants to show up. But I would say he's not going to change too many things. Tactically, I would say he's playing the 3-2-4-1. I mean, he did that with Chelsea too. To me, The big question is who's gonna start up front. Choupo-Moting is getting back. Obviously, he has a variety of players to start with. So that's gonna be very interesting. But in general, I think his most important part right now is to communicate with the players. I think he did it very well at the press conference, saying, okay, it's going to be tough decisions. So he took this up front, obviously, because it was not really fair for him to choose players right now because there was no time. But it's going to be interesting.
I don't know whether it's the cold, Derek, but I can see tears rolling down on his face as he's talking about the game. The emotion of tomorrow, it must
indeed
be. Derek,
yes.
Where would you put your highlighter pen?
I think in terms of this game, if you're looking at the Tuchel factor, I think that really is one of the big highlights, because we've seen Bayern often enough this season under Julian Nagelsmann. We know how he liked to play. Thomas Tuchel, to me, is the ultimate pragmatist, and he's taking charge of a team that is already in place, but he will want to tweak one or two things. Now, the great thing is, speaking right now, Archie and Arne, we don't know what he's going to want to tweak. tweak, precisely. But it won't be the Nagelsmann style. And what he did at Chelsea was admirable. He solidified them. And I think there's an element of having to do that with this Bayern team. But there are other factors at play here too. Kingsley Coman, for example, for me, has to play based on the form he's been in. Hasn't always played, wasn't always playing under Julian Nagelsmann. Joao Cancelo's an interesting one because, again, he's been on the outside looking in, but does Tuchel look at a player like that and say, this is a top quality operator, I've got to have him in the team. So the extent to which Tuchel does change things or not will be fascinating.
We've got to talk about Borussia Dortmund as well, because they are the form team in the Bundesliga in 2023. I wouldn't have thought, Arne, watching Borussia Dortmund against Augsburg, that this Dortmund team, back in the first game of January when we saw them, would be collecting 9 more points, at least that, than this Bayern Munich team. Why is that?
I didn't expect that, to be honest. I think the least of us would. But you just mentioned Augsburg versus Borussia Dortmund. They won a game they shouldn't have won, to be honest. And this is actually Bayern style back in the days. So therefore, I think it's really positive. But in general, I think tomorrow it's going to be really tough because, as I mentioned earlier, Bayern Munich is going to show up. Every player wants to prove himself, especially in the first game. But still, Borussia Dortmund is number one right now. I think the last time at this time of the year, it was in 2014, that Borussia Dortmund was number one. I mean, this is impressive, right?
Derek?
Well, I think if you look at Dortmund, and I wrote about this in my ESPN column this week, it hasn't been the same cast of characters dominating for Dortmund in every game. It's been different players. Now, of course, you have Julian Brandt before his injury, who was playing maybe the best football of his career, certainly the best for a long time. You have others who have chipped in, like Karim Adeyemi, who probably isn't going to be fit enough to start, but might have a role to play off the bench. And, you know, then you have Marco Reus, who is still one of the classiest footballers in Germany and can decide a game on his own. But they've got to put it all together in a meeting with Bayern. And that is easier said than done. It's one thing to win all these matches that they've won, and full credit to them and to Edin Terzic for coming up with the right tactics. But this is Bayern at the Allianz Arena, and history speaks for Bayern in this fixture. And the extent to which Dortmund are intimidated, I don't think they will be, I don't think they should be, based on how they've been playing, but the extent to which there might be an intimidation factor maybe is something we'll have to reflect on later.
You talk about that home record, Derek. Bayern have only lost 3 of their last 75 home games at the Allianz Arena in all competitions, and none of their last 25 home games. That speaks for them, but let me get a quick prediction from you both then to wrap this up, Arne.
And to also top it up, Thomas Tuchel, after taking over a new team, I think he won at least the first 6 games. So it was with Borussia Dortmund, PSG, and also with Chelsea. So therefore, I think it's even harder for Borussia Dortmund to win tomorrow. So therefore, you want my prediction?
I do.
Bayern Munich is going to win, I would say, 3-1.
Derek?
I am actually going to go for a draw. Ooh. And again, that is swimming against the tide of recent history. But I think Dortmund tails are up here. And I think under Tuchel, it'll be a little bit more cautious than it was under Nagelsmann. So I think Dortmund are going to get the point that will see them stay top of the table.
And that would make for a cracking Clásica, which is what we're all hoping for, to follow up from what we saw in the first half of the season. And given the drama we've seen off the pitch in the last few weeks, who would bet against more of that on the pitch tomorrow? Bayern Munich against Borussia Dortmund. Ooh.
Unfortunately, Archie, most of our panel are not seeing that. They're all seeing a Bayern win as it stands so far. Shaka and I are both sitting on the fence, but the likes of Craig and Stevie both going for Bayern winning, as is Stuart Robson, who joins us now from Munich. I mean, he's been covering a lot of Bundesliga lately. He must be practically fluent in German at this point, Robbo. We won't talk too much about the scarf, but you've seen enough Bayern for them to win this one then for you.
Yes, even with the change of manager, I think they're still the better side. There's a problem with Dortmund. They could be missing Schlotterbeck, the centre-half. Now, I don't think he's a wonderful player. He's likely to make mistakes when he does play, but the choices to bring in would be Hummels. Well, I've seen Hummels play in recent times, and he can't run at the moment, and he's making too many mistakes. So that would be a major blow for Dortmund if they had to play Hummels, or they put Emre Can back as one of the centre-backs. That's a major problem. But I still think Bayern, with the quality of players they've got, and I saw them in the Champions League against PSG, I think they were still way better than PSG over the two games. They've still got, I think, a good back three with Pavard, Upamecano and De Ligt. And I still think they've got two good wing-backs in Cancelo down one side and Davis down the other side, and Kimmich and Goretzka in midfield. It's the front areas where they might have one or two issues. But I still think Bayern are the better side, and I think they're going to win the game.
Thomas Tuchel's just come in. He's not had long to work with them. They've not been in the best form. Why?
Robbo, by the way, Robbo wasn't allowed in that segment.
Oh, the one.
No, Derek and Archie said he's an outsider. Robbo, you're not to come in. you don't speak enough.
You're Robbo absolutely speak right. Enough. You got it absolutely right.
He doesn't speak enough German. Look, he's just in. We put the graphic up. It's tilted heavily, obviously, towards Bayern historically. And the other side of the coin is, Bayern have better players. Now, obviously, the club have felt Nagelsmann's not getting the best out of them. Not to say Dortmund don't have good players, but Bayern have better players. Bayern have a better squad. And we can argue now Bayern have a better manager. So I am expecting a reaction. And I'm expecting Bayern Munich to win this. They're at home, new manager, strong squad. And they've shown before, when it comes to the crunch in the Bundesliga, the big games, they get the job done.
So how are things going to change under Tuchel for you then, Stuart, from what you've seen so far? The guys were talking earlier about some of the adjustments he might be making.
Yeah, I'm not sure he's going to change too much. I think, as I heard the guys saying, because I was allowed to listen to them, although I wasn't allowed to be on the show with them, I was allowed to listen to them. So I heard exactly what Derek was saying. And I don't think he's going to change too much. I think he'll still stick with the back three. I think he'll play with wing-backs. It's the front areas where I think he's got some decisions to make. Will he go with Choupo-Moting through the middle? Will he bring Mane in? I think, and Derek said it, Coman, I think, has been in excellent form. Will he actually play wide, or will he play in that sort of role, sort of when they play with a main striker and two just in behind, which Coman has played on occasions? Gnabry's played in those positions. Musiala, we're not sure whether he's going to be ready to play. So there's lots of decisions for him to make. I think he will want to play on the front foot. I think they will try and play quite a decent pressing game. I think the players will be up for it. Is Thomas Tuchel going to turn them around completely? I don't think they need turning around completely. They're not a bad side as they are already. So I think there's not going to be too much difference between the Nagelsmann side and the Thomas Tuchel side.
How difficult is that, though, Stevie, as a coach? I know he's got a lot of experience, but to come in and hit the ground running with a big game like this for Thomas Tuchel?
Do you know, I'll tell you what, it's a lot easier when you're put in charge of a team like Bayern Munich, that's for sure. And quite frankly, I think in some ways it's good that he's only just come in, because he's experienced enough that he's not going to try straight away and change a lot of things in such a short space of time, that he will just wind them up and put them out and play. I think you'll see in the coming weeks maybe a change of tactics and a change of the way they play. But as far as this game, it's about winding them up, getting them ready to go after Dortmund. And I think Dortmund are absolutely there to be killed. You know, Bayern are going to come out of the traps because of the Tuchel factor. And again, if Schlotterbeck doesn't start, and I'm not a fan of Schlotterbeck, you're looking at a back three of Schüller, Can and Hummels. I mean, seriously, against Bayern Munich? I honestly don't see this. I think this contest could be done early. I think Bayern will come out, all guns blazing, and I just don't see that Borussia will be able to hold them.
And that goes back to Robbo's point. I mean, Choupo-Moting's been in excellent form, but if it is going to be Schüller and Hummels back there, the one area he might just make a small change is that front area. He might go for a little bit of pace up there, rather than, you know, a big front man like Choupo-Moting going up against two big strapping centre-halves. He might go for a bit of pace in there to get down the channels, because those two are not the most mobile. I mean, apparently Sula's very fast once he gets up to speed, we've been told. But Hummels is not fast at all. The legs have gone. It's about experience with him. So the team selection is going to be interesting. And, of course, this Bundesliga title race has been tight and exciting this season, and everybody's been waiting for Borussia Dortmund in particular to crumble. And I think there's a pressure on them to show that they are the real deal this year, that they can take Bayern all the way. And if they can go into the Allianz and get a result, then that's one way of doing it. But if Bayern Munich crush them tomorrow, then you could just see them faltering off the back of that.
Stuart, who's got to have a big game then for Dortmund? Who's going to be the difference maker for them if they are to take something away from this?
Well, I'm not going to say it because he's English, but Jude Bellingham, when I've seen him play for Dortmund in recent times, has been absolutely magnificent. He's run games. He's run beyond people. He's defended well. He's passed the ball well. He's done everything you want from a midfield player. And if Dortmund are to get anything out of this game, he's got to be at his very best. They're going to play probably Guerrero in that midfield area, a left-back who plays in midfield. They're going to probably play with a holding midfield player. That could be Özcan or it could be Emre Can. But Jude Bellingham's got to be the all-round midfield player. He's got to defend well, he's got to attack, he's got to make runs beyond the centre forward. If he plays well, Dortmund have a chance.
When it comes to the Bayern dressing room, though, there's been a lot of talk about this being a factor in Nagelsmann going. Some players being supportive of Nagelsmann. We've even heard them come out, the likes of Joshua Kimmich. Does that matter now,
no,
with Tuchel coming in? Will that be a problem for him?
I don't think so at all. And I think the fact that it's Borussia Dortmund they're playing as well will completely blow away anything like that. It'll be focused on the task ahead, and the fact that there's a new manager in kind of brushes away all that. If you had an interim or something like that, then you can maybe see how it would fester and they would think about it. But the fact is, they've been decisive. Tuchel's in. It's Borussia Dortmund. It's focus on the game, and I don't see Nagelsmann crossing anybody's mind in this game at all.
No, I mean, it's not going to make a difference now for Tuchel, but I think down the line he has to make sure the dressing room is 100% behind him. And look, he's got the CV, the experience, the resume, that they shouldn't doubt him. I mean, Nagelsmann was a young coach, up-and-coming coach, still is, that was going to be the next great thing, and he may be one day. But think about Tuchel at Chelsea at the end when he had that Lukaku issue. It wasn't all Tuchel's fault, but it was under his watch. And it reared its head and it really sort of derailed a lot of what Chelsea were trying to do. All the talk was about Lukaku, didn't want to be there. Was Tuchel going to play him? And whilst I don't think he'll have that at Bayern, it's hugely important that he makes sure all the senior players down the line to the end of the season are on board. And I think just by his respect himself, when the players see Thomas Tuchel coming in, with all respect, rather than Julian Nagelsmann, they sit back and say, this guy knows what he's doing. This guy's been there, he's seen it, and he's done it.
I think if you think about it, a dressing room generally, there's always the odd one, but generally, 99 out of 100, the guy that walks through the door straight away gets respect, and then it's up to him to lose it. I don't think it's the other way around. You don't go in away down there and you earn respect. I think everybody respects, and they certainly will respect Tuchel. It's up to him to keep it and not lose it.
So there's absolutely no chance, do you think, then, Robbo, that this Nagelsmann decision will come back to bite Bayern on the backside?
No, because Tuchel's a good manager. I'm not sure that it was the right decision initially to get rid of Nagelsmann. If you're going to appoint a young manager, you've got to give him time. He's going to make some mistakes. And I was around the Bayern Munich squad in pre-season, and you felt as though he was under pressure there. One or two of the players were talking about they didn't play particularly well the previous season, and it was all about him forcing himself on the players and getting rid of Lewandowski. He wanted to get rid of Lewandowski so he could maybe change the tactics. He'd had more power with the senior players who weren't always right behind him in that first season. And it backfired on him because he hasn't been able to change the way they've played particularly. They haven't been free-flowing as they thought they would be. And there's still one or two of the senior players that didn't particularly like Nagelsmann. And if you lose to the senior players, if you lose the battle against the senior players, as we've seen with Arteta winning his battle with Aubameyang and changing Arsenal round, as we've seen one or two other people that we see with Erik ten Hag winning the battle against Ronaldo, it completely changes your status at the club. Nagelsmann wasn't able to do that.
Well, we have a huge former name when it comes to Bayern Munich players on the coverage for Der Klassiker. It will be Bastian Schweinsteiger joining the crew from Munich. Be sure to catch all the coverage, including bonus coverage from 11:30 Eastern on Plus. Then from 12 Eastern, you can catch all the build-up and the big game on ABC and ESPN Plus. We've had some Bundesliga action on Friday in the form of Frankfurt against Bochum. Two teams fighting at different ends of the table. 13th minute, Bochum throw in. And it would be Bochum who take the lead through Takumo Asano.
Goalie's a little unlucky. Good save from Lucilla's shot, and then he couldn't stop Asano.
And then we were going to see a penalty given the other way for Frankfurt.
Well, there's not, no doubt about it. It was a great run into the box. Cuts across the defender who... just keeps going in his stride, runs into the back of him.
Randall Colomwani earns it, scores it. That makes it 1-1 as it stands for these two sides. Frankfurt in sixth in the table after that result, and Bochum back down in 14th, but out of the danger spots after some decent results for them of late. Lots of Bundesliga action to enjoy this weekend on ESPN+, but the big one is Der Klassiker from the Allianz Arena. It's Bayern Munich against Borussia Dortmund. This game also available on ESPN+ and ABC2.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Premier League returning at the weekend, and it is Manchester City against Liverpool at the Etihad. 19 points between them coming into their latest clash. And ahead of it, even though he's been dealing with a groin injury, Pep Guardiola has refused to rule Erling Haaland out of the match. Let's hear from the Man City manager ahead of the game.
Erling is in recovering. Tomorrow we have the last training session. We're going to see how does he feel. And I think that's all.
What is your feeling? What are your thoughts in terms of how far away Erling might be? And if he's not ready for this game, is it more likely to be for
which is afternoon? The last training at 4 o'clock. We'll see. How does he feel?
Our last minute decision there as we welcome in Nadim Manua, Stuart Robson with us as well. Nadim, if Erling Haaland doesn't play, does your prediction of a City win here hold up?
Listen, most of my predictions are wrong anyway, but I think he's obviously a very important player for them, but they've been able to adapt in the past, and I think they'll continue to do so when they don't have that standard number nine out there. I think whether that's a case of Julian Alvarez coming in or going towards the systems that they've had in the last couple of seasons and overall against Liverpool at home, you know, they do pretty well, and I think that's probably why everyone's predicted a Man City win. And, you know, it's always dangerous when it's unanimous. But City, you know, they've been better than Liverpool this season, and they've got a fantastic home record. So whoever arrives there, you're going to fancy City more times than not. But if he is missing, it is going to be a blow. But listening to what Guardiola's saying there, it sounds to me like Haaland wants to play, Haaland wants to be involved. And if that's the case, then I'm sure he'll do everything to be out there and do what he can to help the team and sort of help them try and push to try and win the Premier League title.
If this was City and Liverpool going at loggerheads like they have been previous seasons, then I think it could tip the balance. Possibly. But I don't really think it does here. I mean, yeah, you want his goals, but Liverpool have just been so poor for most of the season. And City have so much to play for in terms of the Premier League. And I know Liverpool have got hanging on to a sort of top four. But City have just been strong in all departments. And the one thing for Guardiola is, he's talking about the players going to make the decision, and I suppose at the end of it kind of is what happens. But they've got this big Champions League games coming up as well. You don't want to lose him for a few weeks. So it's a balancing act in terms of how fit actually is he. But in terms of the two teams at the moment, I think City will cope admirably if Erling Haaland is not fit.
Would you risk him for it, Stuart, if it is like kind of touch and go?
I would never risk a player that's might be, you know, 50% fit, 60% fit. I don't ever think it's worth risking a player, because if he plays unfit and doesn't play particularly well, he's then might have the injury worse, then he can't play the next week. If he's not fully fit, don't play him and make sure he's ready for the next game. Alvarez will come in and do a good job for Man City. They've got players that can make runs beyond him at times, and I still think they'll be stronger than Liverpool. So, no, I wouldn't risk him.
Liverpool do not have the worst record against Manchester City. Anything, obviously you're not going for a Liverpool win here, but why not?
Well, because as Craig said, you know, previous games between these two, it's been tough to choose between them. And the fact is that Man City with Erling Haaland are big favourites to win this game. But Man City without Erling Haaland are still big favourites to win this game. So the Haaland situation, from a Liverpool point of view, yes, if he doesn't play, it's better. But you're still against a side that, if they move the ball the way they can, Liverpool have shown that from a defensive point of view, they can't cope. Pretty much that's what Real Madrid did to Liverpool. They moved the ball around accurately and quickly, and Liverpool's defence, from middle to back, could not cope with it. That is my big worry. Listen, going forward, Liverpool have got players that can cause City problems, and Liverpool can put the ball in the net. Unfortunately, this is going to be about what City turns up. If this is a sharp City, then Liverpool, in my opinion, clearly, are underdogs going into this game, big time.
And you looked at that graphic, October, I think it was, a Liverpool 1-0 win. We all thought at that time, everybody went, right, that's it. That's the turning point in the season. That's the game that turns the season around. And nothing could have been further from the truth. They went even further back the way. On top of that, their main player, Virgil van Dijk, that is, has had a horrendous 10 days in terms of the criticism that he's had. Now, he may say it's not affected me, but, you know, we talked about it, the sort of bashing of a personal nature he took from Van Basten and Hullet, which was bordering on ridiculous, some of the words. But, you know, he's human at the end of the day. He knows he's not having a great season. He knows he's had all that up flak. And now he's got to go in and face the second best team at the moment in the Premier League, with possibly the best striker on the planet. So there's not a lot pointing towards Liverpool at the moment.
And, you know, I've got to say, the fact that Virgil van Dijk has been under so much pressure has actually saved one of his teammates, a guy called Alisson, in goal. Because recently, he's been, in my opinion, he has been a shadow of the guy who at one point was the best goalie in the world, particularly with his feet. When the ball goes to his feet now, you're doing this. You know, we used to say, this guy with his feet is unbelievable. He should be an outfield player. He could play for Brazil outfield. He's that good. Well, I tell you what, with his feet in particular recently, added to not making a save, I don't remember the last time Alisson made a save, but with his feet, he's for some reason, his confidence is completely shot.
I hear there is some redemption for Virgil van Dijk, though, in that he has made your combined 11 that you were asked to put together ahead of this game. But he's one of only four Liverpool players who have, Stevie. Talk us through it.
Well, I think clearly Walker over Alexander-Arnold from a defensive point of view is an absolute and utter no-brainer. John Stones, I think, is a great footballer. And I think defensively, he's gotten a lot better. Virgil van Dijk, still one of the best centre-backs in Europe. And Andy Robertson, I think, on the left-hand side, to me, is better than Aki. Aki's played there a lot. The middle of the park kind of tells you what I think of Liverpool. I think they've been struggling big time. That's partly some of the problems they've had defensively is the midfield three haven't been able to stop anybody getting at the back line. And that's why I've got Silva, who's been brilliant. Rodri, you know, passing the ball, he's fantastic. And of course, De Bruyne. You can't not have De Bruyne playing.
Robbo, do you like Stevie's combined 11? Do you agree with it?
Absolutely. You know, I always agree with Stevie, as you know. I like that midfield as well. And Kevin De Bruyne is still the best passer of the ball in the world. So, he, you know, he has to be in that team. Virgil van Dijk, yeah, he has been a top-class defender, has been one of the best in Europe, but not at the moment. So that's gonna be an interesting one. But, yeah, I agree with Stevie on most of those players, as I always do.
Nadim, is this a massive sign of the times, the fact that it is only four Liverpool players in a combined 11? Granted, it's Stevie's opinion here that he's put it together, but is this showing City's dominance over them this season?
Yeah, I would say so. But I think the key bit is in that midfield, because I think you could say overall for Liverpool this season, that's where they struggled quite a lot. Obviously, they've had defensive frailties as such, but we've not really seen them sort of control and have that high energy nature about them in certain games, which has really surprised us. So as a consequence, the City midfield has to come to the fore. Maybe that'll change in the future, I'm not sure. But as far as picking combined 11s go, that's not too bad, Stevie. Credit where it's due. Credit where it's due.
Hey, there you go.
Tell you what, he's lucky.
Hey, there you go.
I'm surprised it was four made it in. To be quite honest.
Would you not have made...
Oh, no, I argue, it's hard to argue against, you know, having Nunes, who, you know, just looks as if he's going to be, and is a handful. And I think next year you'll see an even better Darwin Nunes. I don't think, obviously, Salah's not had the best season either. You could make an argument for Diaz, but he hasn't played all year, to be honest with you. But, yeah, as the boys said, I don't think...
I actually went to stats, can you believe it? If you look at the stats, Nunes and Salah.
Hold on. Is this team based on algorithms?
if it was, I don't think it would be any other change.
So what's the stats on Diaz?
Goals and assists. Nunes and Salah are way ahead of Grealish, of Foden, of Mahrez. I mean, way ahead. And that front three.
When's he ever based anything?
I'm actually
on stats?
Speechless.
Well, I've just started.
and he's just told us that he's just started using stats. Let's put it on the City side of things, though, Nadim. Is this a must-win for them if they're to stay in the title race with Arsenal?
Yeah, it certainly feels that way. I think Liverpool as well, they've got three big games this week. They've got City, Chelsea and Arsenal. So they're obviously going to be pushing on. But for City, they're at the point now where there are so few games left that they could literally win every game between now and the end of the season and still finish second. So they have to keep their side of the bargain. Hope that Arsenal drop some more points somewhere along the road. But, you know, as I say, this is them. This is the end of the season. This is when they go for everything. This is when they really try and push on in Premier League titles. And it's strange for them to not be at the top at this moment, because we're so used to seeing them sort of being dominant and getting away from people. But, yeah, this is every game between now and the end of the season. It's a must-win, not just for City. Probably going to feel the same way for Liverpool. And even for the teams down the bottom, every game is huge at this stage, because this is where, you know, things become more absolute. Your time is running out. You have to get a result now, because, you know, you're not going to wait another month, 2 months to try and figure it out, because before you know it, your situation might be sorted out already.
Yeah.
City just keep having to make sure they're asking Arsenal the question. Arsenal play at 10 o'clock tomorrow against Leeds. They'll know the result.
Right.
They've shown really no sign of weakness recently. I suppose maybe the Bournemouth game, they pulled themselves back from oblivion, really, with that late winner. But generally, they've been rolling teams over. There's not a real sign that's going to go away. So Man City have to make sure they just keep putting that pressure on. Every game, putting the pressure on. Are you up to it? Can you cope with this? Are you good enough? And so far, the answer has been yes. But if somehow Liverpool were to take this victory tomorrow, and that's a sort of big if, the way they've played, and Arsenal were to win, I mean, it's not quite celebrating for Arsenal, but it would be damn close. So it is a huge early kickoff game for Man City tomorrow, no doubt about it.
Yeah, big day in the Premier League tomorrow. The big thing for Liverpool this season now is to try and actually finish in the top four. As we take a look at the odds for this, now they may be 19 points shy of City, but they are only 7 points behind Spurs and have played two less games than them, which is probably why Jurgen Klopp is not ruling out a top four finish either.
It's like a Champions League week. We are out. I am super excited, absolutely. But that's the thing. Look, we are not dumb, at least not particularly. So we have the last game we played was in Madrid. Was not a good game. The game before was Bournemouth. Ooh, was not a good game. The game before was world class. So we have to make sure that that we pick up from there.
If they win this game, Stevie, Liverpool, does that just reignite that whole hope for the top four?
Well, it does, yeah. I mean, it does, but unfortunately, this will not be the first time that I'm thinking along those lines. And in previous occasions, when all of a sudden, like Craig saying with a 1-0 against City, you think it's coming and they just let you down. So, listen, can Liverpool beat Man City? Yes, they can. Can Liverpool go on in a run between now and the end of the season and win every game? Not a chance. There's nothing to suggest that they can do that. And so, they're going to have to rely on other teams slipping up.
We touched on a story yesterday that our Rob Dawson wrote. It's over on the ESPN.com website, and it's about Harry Maguire and sources telling ESPN that Harry Maguire is very affected by social media, particularly in the aftermath of matches. Sources have told ESPN that Maguire can, on occasion, focus too much on social media criticism, despite being advised to stay off Twitter in the immediate aftermath of matches. Nadim, yesterday, speaking about this, Frank Leboeuf told us about a coach friend of his, he wouldn't reveal who it was, who said that it was just so different these days, because after a game, you'd see players in the dressing room, as soon as they come back in from the game, just all pulling out their phones and looking straight away at social media. Is that something you ever saw or experienced when you were still playing?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely it was. I think that's something that changed a lot over the years from when I started playing in 2004 to when I was on the way in 2020. Because everyone is connected now. Most players, if not all players, are online. They all have public profiles. And, you know, they just see a different world to, say, the one that existed when myself and the other guys were playing right at the start. So this is the way that it's gone. And they do go on their phones, probably doing a multitude of things. Some of it is just mind-numbing. They're not actually paying attention to what's going on. It's just a habit. Sometimes you look around, you see everybody on their phone. And, you know, it feels like it'd be fair to be critical. But it's just different. Everybody's kind of in the same situation. They all connect with each other. And I think with Harry, he's not young. He's 30 years old. And, yeah, he's going online. But I don't know, are people watching him over his shoulder as he goes on Twitter and scrolls through the replies and see what people are saying? I'm not sure. And if they believe it's affecting him, then, you know, maybe it's a case he needs to maybe do it less. But ultimately, he's made it this far with having this habit. So, I don't know, it's a strange one. And for him as well, if he's looking online to see what people think about his performance, he's in a very, very unique situation where if he does well, nobody says anything. But if he does badly, everyone wants to tell him. So there's no actual net gain to be had from going to look what people think about him as a player. So, you know, maybe I'd advise against it. But then, as I say, it's younger people. They live in a different world to, say, some of the ones who are older who don't need the internet. But for them, they're very much a big part of it. And I wish him well. I hope it doesn't affect his football too much. But it's fair to say as well, as far as playing for England goes, he checks his phone, he does just fine for them. So maybe there's something there, maybe there's not.
Even if a player does well, even if a player has a great game, there will still be the moronic element finds something that has a negative undertone to it. Because these platforms are riddled with a lot of sensible people, but they're riddled with idiots, right? Some of the worst. So, it is the modern day social media, but there's ways and means of cutting out what you do and don't see. And if it is affecting you as a player, you got to do the common sense thing, is you don't spend time checking that people are hammering you. Because if it's affecting you, then that's just a silly thing to do. So, I don't know how much truth there is in it or how much it's affecting them. I don't know. But what I do know is all these players will be getting pummeled. Because that's what happens. You've only got to go on anybody's social media account. We talk about Ronaldo this week. Even dared to suggest that he was becoming too old to be picked for Portugal and they should move on. Oh my God. Everybody got roasted. Now, we don't care. We just come in and we do our jobs. You have to be sensible about these things. If you're a modern-day player and you're more affected than others by what people are saying, you should not be on these platforms as much.
There's a couple of things. If you're Harry Maguire and you're going through on the field what he's been going through, why are you going on social media? Because not only are the opposition fans giving you grief, You're getting grief off your own fans. So why are you doing it? And actually, in my opinion, makes no difference between today and when we played. Because the papers still gave people stick. So what you did then was you didn't read the papers. I mean, it's common. It should be common sense. It really should be. And Harry Maguire, as Nadim said, has got a 3 in front of his name. And if he's looking on social media to figure out how good or bad he was, then I don't understand how he's got to Manchester United. Because as players, you should know whether you've had a good day, an average day, or a horrible day without going on social media and looking for a clap in the back or whatever. I mean, come on, have a bit of common sense.
What do you think of it all, Stuart? Are you glad that social media wasn't around when you were playing? Do you think that you would have had an account and been checking it if it were around?
I certainly wouldn't have had an account, and I certainly wouldn't have been checking it. I'll give you an example. When I first started writing for the Sunday Telegraph, and I wrote about 6 or 7 articles, and then you could press a button and see what people said about your articles. For 6 or 7 weeks, everything was great. Oh, so I kept on looking at it. Oh, they're saying great things about me. What a great article that was. And the 7th one, I criticised Arsene Wenger. Oh, my goodness gracious. It all came down, and that was the last time I ever looked at a social media or a Twitter page or anything to do with anything that I do. It's better off not knowing. The only people you have to make sure are on your side are your manager, your coach, and the other people I used to get advice from was my family. That's all that you need to make sure that enjoy what you're doing. Don't worry about the idiots that are writing in on Twitter and all those sort of accounts. It's absolute madness for Harry Maguire to do that.
Last word goes to you on this one, Nadim.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think what everyone said has been like so reasonable, but I think ultimately, just younger players, they're different. They've got more of a compulsion to be online, and most of them have grown up online. So for them to step away from it, it's a huge leap, far bigger than, say, any of ourselves deciding to go away from it. So I think if anything, if this report ends up being true and he can't get away from Twitter, then it's a sign that he is addicted to that and he does need some sort of help, because it's not helping him on the field, off the field and so on and so forth. Because to receive that much opinion about yourself, which you probably believe to be wrong all the time, but not be able to step away from it, if it's true, as I say, that is a bigger cry for help. And I think he should be supported through that, because ultimately, nobody needs to go through that if that's going to be the case. And like I say, it's a privilege in some ways to be in a place where you can step away from it, because lots of people who are younger than us, for them, it's almost impossible, unfortunately.
I think we need to call it the Derek Ray syndrome. Derek who can't... Whenever I see him, doesn't matter if he's in a crowd and he's in a pub or a restaurant, he cannot get off that phone and stop checking his Twitter.
But everybody loves Derek, so nobody would say anything mean to him.
No, not many people say mean things to Derek.
Yeah.
One or two, but he... and it is... Some people... And I say this, as you know, Derek is a very good friend. He is... It's almost like... A drug's the wrong word. But it is like... It just draws some people to it.
Compulsion, isn't it? You just can't help it.
And some people just can't help checking and looking. And unfortunately, as we know, there's not a lot of sensible people out there who put sensible things on social media. So you have to be careful.
You do have to be careful.
Stevie's thinking about reactivating his.
Oh, wow.
Maybe.
Definitely.
Tweet responsibly.
And Rob was thinking about joining.
Tweet responsibly. And make sure to catch the FA Cup semis. It's Manchester City taking on Sheffield United on April 22nd. And it's Brighton against Manchester United on April 23rd. Coverage beginning at 11:45 and 11:30 a.m. Eastern, respectively, on ESPN+. Nadim, Stevie and Craig will be answering your questions on the latest edition of Extra Time. Head on over to our YouTube page if you'd like to see that. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Barcelona have confirmed that they are in contact with Lionel Messi with regards to a return to the club. Here's Rafael Yuste, the Barcelona vice president, talking about it. He said, "I'm still gutted he couldn't continue here. Of course, I would like him to come back because of what he represents on a sporting, social and economic level." We are in contact with Messi's camp. Yes, beautiful story, should have happy endings. And there is a mutual love between the two parties. Well, Gemma Soler is joining us now to talk more about it. This story is not going away. And it would appear, Gemma, that a Messi return is closer.
Hola, Kay. Yes, can a last dance be possible? We'll see, but it's true that it was a very exciting morning earlier today in Barcelona because it's the first time that Barcelona publicly is open to explain that they are working on that possibility and they are contacts. I will say this, that the contacts are between the president, Joan Laporta, and his agent and father, Jorge Messi, not directly to the player. And yes, there are contacts with Xavi Hernandez and Lionel Messi. They have always been. They are good friends from when they play together, and they kept on the relation, and they talk quite often. Is it possible? Yes, it's possible, even though it's extremely difficult. Why? Because of the economic complicated situation of Barcelona. There is the chance of taking some extra levers that they were already approved by the members, and they will have to sell because they need to get rid of a lot of payrolls in the club. So I'm talking about possible sales of players with a good market outside, like Christensen, Kessie, Ansu Fati, Ferran, Eric Garcia. So yes, this is, and the biggest chance they have is because Messi and especially his family, they miss living in Barcelona and Castelldefels and the environment that they have here in Barcelona. So if you ask me, will this be happening? If you ask me a month ago, I would say like 5%. Now I will say about 20-25%. It's possible, but it's very difficult.
Okay, so that's talking about the budgetary side of things. But it would appear, hearing all this, that it isn't just talk to please the fans and that there does seem to be a genuine desire from both parties for this to happen.
But let's look at it from a football parlance on the field. Barcelona are going to win La Liga this year, right? In all probability. They've had two of the best youngsters in Europe, in Gavi and Pedri. If Messi comes back, and it's a big F, and plays, what does it mean for one of those guys? You know, how does that work? You know, we know Busquets can't keep going on, but none of those two that I mentioned plus Messi are a holding midfielder. So, you know, it's all very well coming back, but you've got these new young players that have come through, and obviously, were coming through when Messi was there, Pedri had been through. But what does it mean on a week-to-week basis, picking a team for some of those young players that have been successful, for a guy who ultimately has probably got a couple of years left at most? So there are, never mind the finances, there are football implications as well to him coming back, is there not?
Aye. You know, can you imagine a young Messi and all of a sudden they decided to bring Ronaldinho back, who was past his best? Can you imagine that? And not only is Craig talking about Pedri and Gavi, he's going to have to change the whole way he plays. So you're going to change the whole way you play for a guy who's past his best, albeit it's Messi. I would think that the one person in all this who probably hasn't said anything, who does not want this to happen, will be Xavi. Because I'll tell you what, If Messi's under pressure coming back, Xavi's going to be under even more.
Has there been talk about this, Gemma, in Barcelona, as if he is to come back, what it would mean for a player that does have a starting position right now?
Well, if we have to believe what Xavi always says in public when he is asked, he says that he, of course, wants the best players and that he wants, he always said that he would love a Messi's comeback. And if you analyze that the way he changed the system, now that he's playing with the four midfielders, and you can imagine a Messi, as you were mentioning, not at his best, but still very talented, one of the best players on the world, even though he's 35, he could play a little bit more back, as we remember Messi in the previous years in Barcelona. And for example, now with this Xavi system, when Pedri is not in the field, there is a miss of that kind of magic, a player that is able to break the lines and assist and has that kind of talent. I can imagine Messi being there. The other thing is, what role is Messi expecting here, playing the 50 games per season? If he accepts a role where he might not play absolutely all the games, and this means that having chances for Pedri, for Gavi, it could be an option. It's true that if you think in Barcelona's future, maybe it's not the most wise option, because you might cut the career of young talents. And the other thing is, would he fit with Lewandowski, that has a long contract? With Dembélé, they didn't have the best, I don't know if relation, but not on the field, there were some issues with some of the players, other players as well. Ter Stegen with Xavi, they always had a very special relationship, and I don't think that would be a problem if the roles that I am the manager, I'm no longer your colleague, and if I decide to sit you, you have to accept it. If this is pre-talked, I don't think there would be a problem.
Well, let's hear from Xavi on it, because obviously this has been talked about for quite a while right now, and we've, as Gemma said, we've heard a few things that Xavi's had to say about it. He says, we're friends, we speak often, but it's not the moment to talk about this for the good of Leo, the club, or the squad. It's an issue we're dealing with, but from that to him returning is a big leap. I hope we'll see him come home. I'm the first person who would love to see the best player ever return. And it is normal that fans are excited about a last dance like Michael Jordan. Does Xavi have to walk a fine line here with what he does say about this situation in case it is to go ahead and happen?
Well, yeah.
He just danced around it there. Right?
He does. And he has got those players that we talked about to protect, who may be asking some questions if things are looking close. But this is all pie-in-the-sky stuff, really, from Barcelona. I get it. You know, we've all admired Lionel Messi. Not many haven't. But this club has had so many problems. It's still facing them. But on the field, it's getting out of it. It's starting to get back somewhere near its best. Bit to go. But surely to God, it has to keep looking forward to the future and not to look back to this historical love-in that was great but has gone. I just feel it's like looking back the way rather than looking forward with what's good. No?
Same for you?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I actually find it hard to believe that many people think this is a good idea. And I'm not so sure that Laporte's just trying to keep some people happy or saying the right thing for the fans. Because does he really believe it? Come on.
What's your instinct, Gemma, on Messi being back at the club this summer, if you were to put a number on it?
I agree that there are interest in this being... you guys called me today and asked me about this and not about Negreira. So there is an interest of this. It's better to talk about this than the other scandals and complicated situations Barcelona is facing. Also, for this board of members, at least trying to pretend to do everything they can to bring Messi back. It's a way to restore that thing that they did so wrong, because when he was a candidate, Laporta said, don't worry, I'm going to renew Messi in a barbecue, and then it wasn't possible. So they have to try. They need to keep fans excited, to have some faith, because the reality is that they are not able to register Gavi yet. They haven't been able to offer Alejandro Balde renewal, and they also talk about Gundogan, Iñigo, Martinez. So it's kind of a strange situation, but it's a debate. And I think in the other part as well, Messi or the people who manages his career, it's okay to put some pressure on PSG, and that we all today and the next days we all talk about this possibility.
All right. Well, you can see Barcelona in action this weekend. They will be taking on Elche. I think you're doing the coverage for that game, aren't you, Craig?
Always, I'm always here when the mighty Elche are playing.
Yes, he is. And all of these games will be available on ESPN Plus. La Liga is back. And make sure to catch the Copa del Rey semi-final leg 2. Barcelona with a slender advantage in this one. Can Real Madrid turn things around and give themselves something to smile for this season? Wednesday, April 5th, 3 p.m. Eastern. Make sure to catch that on ESPN+.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Just taking a look at the top of the championship table after leaders Burnley played out a 0-0 draw with Sunderland on Friday. A win would have taken them to within 6 points of that Premier League return, but it is definitely not far off.
Your boys are getting close.
Getting very close. But we'll see how it all plays out.
Glorious failure.
And we'll see you tomorrow as well.
See how that looks.
Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. We've got Craig and Stevie and Nadim here to answer your questions. So we'll get straight into them, shall we? Yeah, we'll get straight.
What else you want to do?
Well, we could have talked about your issues with IT again, which continue today, but we won't. Right. We won't. All right, Stevie.
Well, he doesn't have to go and see the guys at the Genius Bar now. That's what it's called, isn't it?
Genius.
Do you? Because the last time you went there, they were seen running for the hills.
I've got to get my emails on my phone.
Is that how you get them?
Aye.
Yep. So this is Stevie's been trying to do it over the phone, but there is actually a bar at ESPN where, not that type of bar, where you can go and
for help.
Because we'd be sat
help.
There,
yeah, you'd be there all the time. Stevie, do you think working your way up through levels from lower league air to top flight Liverpool made you a better, more rounded player than mollycoddled academy golden boys like Craig and Nadim?
I mean, as far as the football's concerned, I would say it was probably more to do with what was going on in the rest of the world, being able to go through different stages and learn about actually living the way normal people do. At the time, most people got the bus and all these kind of things. Whereas today, if you look at the kids now, from the ages of, what, 9, they're kind of full-time at some of these clubs. And so the life's just about training, getting mum and dad to take them home, bring them back again. And they kind of grow up in a world that's not a real world, unless you're going to be in it for the rest of your life. I mean, can you imagine being 9, all the way through to, what, 17, when the full-time contracts are being given out, and you've done nothing other than train and travel with your mum and dad back and forward, and all of a sudden you're on the scrap heap. And they wonder why these young kids are completely lost and take the wrong path. So yeah, absolutely. I'm glad my path was the way it was.
I would imagine now they don't clean the dressing room. I would imagine now they don't clean the toilets, clean the players' boots. Put the kit out for all the players at training every day. Paint the stadium. So things we had to do. Run for the last tube after a midweek evening game, because you were doing all those jobs and one of your mates hadn't done it properly, and none of the team could leave until all the jobs were done. And the last trip to North London from Fulham Broadway who was leaving at like 12 p.m. and this is like 11:45.
Like a metro line, a train.
Yeah. Yeah. Underground. All those things, you know, to get to your digs with your family that's an hour away. Oh, and you got to pay for that, and you're on YTS, Youth Training Scheme, £28 a week we got. Just over £100 a month, living in London. I'll give you mollycoddled. By the way, it was fun though. It was great fun, great camaraderie. But as Stevie said, it made you want to be a professional. You know, when you were in that position, it made you want to take that next step. Because it was so tough. Nowadays, what do they get? The youngsters probably get 10 grand a week. They probably get a Porsche or a Ferrari or some sort of fancy car and an apartment. You know what I mean? So, and sometimes the desire from that, sometimes it can be detrimental from a desire perspective. From a technical aspect, it's much improved. And you don't have to do all those side things, but the apprentices in the 80s, probably the 90s, that was an education. Let's put it that way.
Nadim, you're the youngest ex-player on the panel tonight. What was your experience like?
It wasn't as bad as Craig's. It was kind of switching a little bit when I was first coming through. So the emphasis on like cleaning boots and the like, it wasn't that big a deal anymore. And in some ways, some of those things he mentioned, like I'm glad that people don't have to do that anymore because there are other ways to sort of deliver that message. But what I would say is that based on when I was first coming through, like I was filthy rich. I got paid £80 a week, not that measly 28 that Craig had in London, ridiculous. But what I would say is that from back then, it was always the sort of battle because you knew you hadn't made it. Like even if you play for the first team, you're still having to do the commute, still having to get the buses to the training ground, get the tube to wherever. Whereas these days, I feel like with some of the youngsters, financially they've made it before they've actually had a career. So as a consequence, their view on football is probably different to the way that, say, ours was when we were younger. But it's not to say that's necessarily a bad thing. Things have changed. But yeah, my academy setup wasn't brilliant. And even still, like, I was taking the bus all the way until I was 17, 18 years of age. And when I finally got my first car, I was in a VW Polo. Just imagine that, rocking up to a Premier League stadium for a game day. I was a laughingstock, so ultimately, I might have been a golden boy, but, you know, I didn't live that life until much later, let's just say that.
His seat must have been pushed all the way as back as it could. He'd be like sitting in the back seat like
correct.
That, trying to hold on to the steering wheel.
Yeah. Tell you what, it was a great way to learn London, though. You know, travelling, I've told you this. You know, figured it out, a walk from Cricklewood, Childs Hill, down to Golders Green, Northern Line to Edgware, bus to Harrow on the Hill, bus from Harrow on the Hill, you grab the Heathrow bus, Heathrow bus from Harrow on the Hill, it stopped at Hayes and Harlington, a couple of miles before Heathrow, because that's where the training ground was, and a mile walk to the training ground.
You know,
London tour guide.
But we didn't have to do that on the way back. Do you know why? Because we weren't allowed to go back after training. We had to put all the dirty training kit in this crappy old minibus. Eddie Nesveski, who was the youth team coach, would drive it back to Stamford Bridge because there was no facilities to wash the kit at the training ground. That's how bad it was. And we'd all bowl back, stop at the little shop. Boys would go in. I have to say, some people would take, not me, some people would come out with some goodies and hadn't paid for them. Not good.
I didn't realise it.
Not me. Some of the apprentices would go in, come out with chips and everything, and be
this
like...
Is Craig's autobiography?
I didn't realise how spoiled I was.
Oh, yeah.
I used to wake up at 9:15, get my gear on, go out the front door, take a right, and by 9:25, I would go to the front door Anfield.
So, Craig had it hardest. I think that's what we've established.
Well, I didn't think it was hard.
You had it hardest to these three,
I didn't choose where my digs was. That was, you know what I mean?
Great.
I remember Eddie Nesveski driving the minibus. This is how you drive a minibus, by the way. And all the boys were in the back, and he couldn't see out the mirrors. One day, we're going into London. We got to Earl's Court, heading back to Stamford Bridge. Eddie was driving, and he could see nothing. All the boys on the back and all the kit. And he shouted, and he was in the middle lane. He shouted, can I switch lanes? And one of the lads went, yeah, switch lanes, and back straight into your car. Oh, right, and Eddie was the most nervous man on the planet. And he was on the youth team coach at the time, which is down the ladder. He was out offering to get this guy money on the side of the M4. And he shouted, who said I can go? And the boys on the back laughing. The bus was all crumpled up.
There we go. So none
good
of
fun.
Yeah, exactly. None of you were mollycoddled
after. We never had the proverbial pot, but it was fun. And by the way, There's a lot of boys come through that youth system and went on to play at Chelsea and other clubs. A lot. The youth team won nothing, but there's a lot of boys come through because it was a good grounding.
They came up the hard way. Stevie, how important is it for Liverpool to finish in the Champions League position to safely acquire Bellingham?
He's not going there.
I don't. Listen, if Bellingham wants to go to Liverpool, if they're in fourth or fifth, they'll do it. I really don't think that. And I don't know. I feel as though I'm kind of on my own here, but I don't remember Chelsea struggling to get Conte to come as a manager, in particular, when they never got in the top four. It just made it easier the following season because they had no European football. So, am I on my own with this?
No, I think the Bellingham situation is, unfortunately for Liverpool at the moment, there are several other clubs that you would go to from a football perspective. So, if he does want to go to Liverpool, and that's kind of where his heart is, and I don't know that's the case, but it's kind of been mooted by a couple of people, it's really not going to matter where they finish. No. If his heart's set on going to that club. If it's just football and winning things, then that's more of a worry. You're going to go to City or Real Madrid or whatever it is, Bayern Munich, whatever it is. But if his heart's set in Liverpool, they could probably finish mid-table and he'll go there. So it just depends.
Nadim, have you ever been a soccer coach or trainer? Craig is too angry to be a coach.
Who said that?
But you seem like you'd be a solid coach. Do you have any interest? Nine soccer moms said that.
Absolutely. No, zero interest. Absolutely zero interest. I enjoy free time. Enjoy watching games, talking, doing media, all that stuff. But to be doing that on a day-to-day basis, nah. To have less money for more stress, nah. I understand the value, but no. I can barely keep my kids under control, so how am I going to keep other people under control and try and make them better? It's not for me, that, at all.
Where's this narrative came from, by the way?
What narrative?
Well, where's this narrative?
That you're angry.
Not just that. That's a separate conversation. Wait, where's this narrative came from? Chuckle away.
I'm laughing at his reaction.
I'm too angry to be a coach. Because he's had a pop at me a few times over the years. Said it wouldn't happen. I told him I'd change.
An angry coach can be a good coach as well, right?
When last was I angry on this show? See? See?
What? I can't remember. I know, the other week when we had to talk about a league that you didn't want to talk about. Yeah.
That doesn't count.
The Mexican League.
There definitely has been some anger when there's Cristiano Ronaldo topic recently.
Listen, I would adapt.
See, he went already. See, he didn't go like, listen, he went, listen. See, do you feel the anger? See the anger in his
See, he says I would
listen.
He says I would just walk in the dressing room and start banging heads together. I disagree. I think I would.
Oh, you would.
All right.
Party's going astray. Shouts of my bad. You'd be.
I tell you what, I'm with.
You'd be strangling people.
I'm with Nadim though. I mean, you see these people. Roy Hodgson's gone back to Palace, hasn't he? You see these people. And they keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it. And you think, they've got the money. How did they drag? It's a 7-day-a-week job. It never ends. The phone never stops ringing. Agents and, I mean...
We did see the highest paid manager list yesterday.
I think
that might be a big pull for some managers.
Yeah, but what happens if you've got 100 million in the bank and you're in your 70s and you've done it all and you know... And in this club, Roy Hodgson, for example, where's the drive to go 7 days a week again?
Do you know, it's not the...
Is it?
It's how you don't... I don't think it's about the drive, because...
Is it boredom?
No, it's... No.
Is it still wanting to be a part of the game?
The bit I don't understand is why would you take on the stress? But people like Roy Hodgson must have some sort of mental capacity that they don't feel the stress. Because you can't do it in his age.
Okay, his age, but why did you go into management? What's the difference between
you and someone? I've nothing else to do. I don't know what else to do. I don't have a lot of choice.
He's going
into the shoot.
And he's going into computers after this.
I'm going into IT.
Once
he gets sacked for here. But I can assure you, when you're losing, the stress, and as Craig said, it is the phone goes at 10 in the morning, 10 at night. And there's the stress of losing and losing and losing and having and not being able to do anything about it. It's great. You know, it's great having an owner who's got lots of money and you can go and get another player, or you can do this and get this guy and get rid of this guy, but when you can't do anything about it, the stress is unreal. I told you before, I was on blood pressure tablets by the time I got the bullet. And 2 weeks after I got the bullet, I didn't need any. So these guys must have a capacity in their brain that doesn't make them feel the stress. Certainly, I felt it big time, getting beat every week. Stress was unreal.
Now look at me. Picture of health.
Nothing wrong with your eyesight, son.
Don't laugh, kid.
For all.
What about Don the other week? Don said to him on the show, I went, "You're looking well, Stevie." And everybody went, "What?"
Aww,
see what I mean? Thanks, coach. Thanks for building me up for the game tomorrow. You know, it's Friday, right? Game's Saturday.
That was a backhand call. You laugh when I say it.
See what I mean?
She giggled.
She's proving my point.
I brought him treats in today. I'm helping him look well.
That's not helping.
All right. For all, how much time does it take for a team like Bayern to absorb and apply coaches' tactics and perform as plan set? As there is just 10 days away from the clash against Man City.
Is that 10 days?
Nadim.
I think it depends how the last manager's left. If there needs to be a fundamental change, then perhaps it'll take longer. But if you're doing it at this stage of the season, you're just looking at little tweaks, and the players are so good already. If you put them into any sort of like simplistic type system, I imagine they'd understand what they need to learn. And it's just piece by piece. And ultimately, the team is so good that, as I say, I don't think you're going to be teaching them the very basics and core skills and stuff like that. So, you know, a good manager left, a good manager comes in, the players remain the same, the driver's the same. It's still Bayern. They might not be at their absolute best, but they're still a very good side and they could finish the season with a ton of trophies. So I don't think it takes that long as such.
Next question is for you, Nadim. Start, bench or drop, Foxy Lady, Purple Haze, and All Along the Watchtower.
What's that?
What is that?
Hendrick songs.
We always know.
Hendrick songs.
Oh, right.
I'd drop Foxy Lady.
He's under pressure. Jimmy's watching him.
I'll start Purple Haze and bench All Along the Watchtower. I think that's my order, yeah.
All right.
Good job you explained that. Was you lost as well?
There must be some way out of here, said the Joker to the thief.
Sorry?
Last question. For all, who will retire with the most international goals, Messi or Ronaldo?
It's about 20 apart at the moment, give or take a few. So roughly about 20, give or take. That's my out. Bear in mind we're Ronaldo haters this week, apparently. And Messi's still... probably Ronaldo. He's going to hang around, then. Martinez hasn't got the stomach to get rid of him, so he'll be hovering around for a while. So.
It's 122 and 102. So, yeah, 20 apart. That's yeah.
20, yeah.
Yeah.
20.
But Ronnie's what, 37?
8.
38. And Messi's 30...
No, he might be 39.
He's 38, isn't he? He's just gone 38.
Is he?
And Messi's 35, 36. So he's got a couple of years left, Messi. A couple of years to score. That is if Ronaldo stops pretty soon.
Who are you going for?
I'm going to go Messi.
Ronaldo hater. What about you, Nader? Messi or Ronaldo?
I think Ronaldo, and I think, to be honest, I think Messi will probably retire from international football before Ronaldo does. Ronaldo seems like he's still questing for something, whereas Messi's won it. He's done it now, hasn't he? So I wouldn't be surprised if he finishes sooner and Ronaldo's still going in his mid-40s. Call it Tom Brady of football.
I'm going to change. I'm going to go with Nadim. He's right. See, the thing is, if it had been the other way around, You would definitely say Ronaldo, because there's no way he would stop until he got more. But I think actually Needham's got me round to his way of thinking.
Kept
it's
Ronaldo.
A bit like one of his players, isn't it? When he was coaching. Aye. Wasn't angry enough, was he?
No.
And that question didn't get you angry, even though it was a Messi question?
No, I don't get angry these days very often.
Well, let's go before you do.
Got the weekend to work on.
Thanks so much for sending in your questions. We'll see you again tomorrow to do it all over again.